How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Caesars Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Play forced out to center. Here's a chance. 3-on-1 to the line for Buffalo. Pass across. Scores! Great play to Doan in front. And the Sabres, Benson and Doan, connect for the first goal of this series. It's 1-0. Pass to the bumper spot. That one back in front. Scores! Side of the net. Hot Wheels McLeod parked in the right spot, and the Sabres take a 2-0 lead. In the Montreal zone, fires the shot, scores! Welcome back to the Greenway of doing things in the playoffs, and the Sabres take a 3-1 lead with 16:28 to go. Here's Byram right up the middle with a shot, scores! Bo Byram! Bangs it home with 10:59 remaining in the second period, and the Buffalo Sabres are up 4-1 in game one of round two.
Sabres up 1-0 after the win last night against Montreal, and there's another potential win ahead for the captain, Rasmus Dahlin. Welcome into Sabres Live. We've been talking about award finalists, and we know that Rasmus is already a finalist for the Bill Masterton Award, and we've discussed that at length. But today, the Norris finalists have become available to us, and Rasmus Dahlin, for the first time in his career, is a Norris finalist alongside Cale Makar and Zach Werenski. So what an incredible season to date for Dahlin.
Yeah, and we talked to Pierre LeBrun on the show yesterday, and he said he had Dahlin in his top three of the Norris, and obviously I mentioned Werenski and Makar potentially being in there, which leaves a guy like Quinn Hughes outside and others that are very deserving to be in that conversation.
Evan Bouchard needs to be in the conversation because to be reminded that Erik Karlsson recently won a Norris, and it was almost entirely built upon the point total that he had, right? So, yeah, this is an impressive feat when you consider those who are not among the finalists.
So it's interesting because I think that making the playoffs for the Sabres really gave Dahlin that boost. They'll say, hey, he has arrived now. He is a Norris finalist. But a guy like Zach Werenski is not in the playoffs, but it's the numbers, the offense with Werenski the last 2 years. It has been Cale Makar and Zach Werenski the last two seasons that have set has been sitting at the top of the points getter by defensemen in the NHL. So, deserving Werenski, deserving Makar, but very, very deserving of Rasmus Dahlin and everything he's done this year, everything he's gone through. I talked about not just the Masterton, but the Mark Messier Leadership Award, all these things. Mm-hmm. I think Dahlin deserves to have a bigger look, and he's getting it now.
Yes, and outside of Makar having won it twice in the last 4 years, if you go back the last decade, there has been a lot of variety when it comes to the winners of the Norris. Dahlin had previously ranked as high as 8th, 15th, and just last year, 6th in Norris Trophy voting. If I was to do spontaneous trivia with you in Sabres history, because they've never had a Norris Trophy winner, give me 5 Sabres that you think have accumulated Norris votes over the years.
Well, I'm going to say Phil Housley.
Phil Housley?
That's an easy one. I'm going to say Brian Campbell.
Brian Campbell?
Okay, that's a good start. I'm going to go with Alexei Zhitnik.
Alexei Zhitnik actually landed 12th 1 year in Norris voting, so you're 3-for-3.
3-for-3. I would think Mike Ramsey will
be on there. Mike Ramsey got as high as 7th, yes.
Okay, now you're asking me like some of the... Oh, okay, producer Sam is
Sammy
with the suggestions.
And what is the one thing that
so you... So he said Jim Schoenfeld.
Yes,
so
and...
This is why we need a control room camera, so Sammy, you can press and you can actually be on
not
the show.
Not to mention his playoff beard is coming in very handsomely.
Very good.
Schoenfeld was a finalist in 1980, which again speaks to how
greatest,
dominant that 80 team was that ultimately came up short against the Islanders. But it was loaded top to bottom with incredible talent. So, yeah, there's just a
Lindy
sample.
Lindy Ruff is never a Norris finalist?
No, but he did have a pretty significant, you know,
he played both. He played forward and D, right?
As we reel it back in, and we'll talk more about the Norris finalist and everything else around the NHL with Darren Dreger later on in the show. But obviously, tip of the cap to Dahlin for being a finalist with Makar and Werenski. But I think when we're talking about the Sabres and the Canadiens here, and it's 1-0 Buffalo in the series, Lindy was almost intentionally forgetful, I thought, when he was dealing with the media the other day. You know, once they had clinched a spot and they knew it was going to be Montreal, and he was getting questions about having gone head-to-head to them before, and he was being nostalgic. And he kind of downplayed the 83 series, which was his first foray into it as a player. And if you look at the box scores from back then, like when Lindy came into the NHL and was with this group, as it was changing over a little bit from the French Connection era, and then had a little bit more, I would say, muscle in a different way. But Lindy was on the score sheet and or in the box so much when you're talking about Buffalo and Boston series, and then that Montreal, you know, sweep that the Sabres had, a three gamer back in 83. So I'm glad you brought it up, because Lindy needs to be remembered in really positive ways in his playing role, even though there was always so much star power above him. And that kind of brings it back to what we saw last night.
We're going to think about Lindy as a coach, because it's been for so many years in the generation. But yes, the reason why he got into coaching is because he was that type of player that got involved in playing different position and being physical, trying to get some points, knowing how to play the game. So that's why, you know, he got into coaching, and that's why he's been so successful in his second career.
And isn't that what we saw last night from a coach's standpoint? Yeah. Even though there was critical self-evaluation from players and the coaching staff, and that nothing is perfect on the heels of a 4-2 series opening win against Montreal, when you look at the offense last night, who it came from, and even some of the names that we probably didn't touch a ton on last night in our post-game coverage, what did you think as we look back to the night that was?
Well, I thought there was a really good start by the Buffalo Sabres. First run, a penalty, Benson getting into, Hudson gets a tripping penalty. The power play did not performed well at that first power play, and I really think that's still a point of concern for me, despite the fact they went 2-for-3. But you know what? That play off the wall to Benson that led to a 3-on-1, I get it. Lane Hudson tripped in front of the Montreal's bench. That may not happen too many times in this series, right? And you're not going to get that. But it's just the fact that the Sabres were making simple plays out of the defensive zone. You win a draw, up the wall, get your wingers to go through, and then try to win a puck battle, puck race. And I think the Sabres did that a lot in the early going. Then Montreal kind of had some zone time. When you look at the even strength offensive zone possession time, Montreal had 2 more minutes than Buffalo at even strength in zone possession time.
Well, that would be largely third period. Final couple of minutes of the second, for sure.
I also think in the first period, there was a moment where Montreal tried to push a little bit, but then the Sabres scored that second power play goal, and it kind of took a lot out of Montreal going up 2-0, something they had not experienced in the first round, being down by 2 goals at any moment.
Right, and I think when you look at what happened after the Doan goal from Benson, which was a terrific assist, obviously the McLeod goal on the power play from Benson and Doan.
What about that angle?
Well, it's... You
His
tell
feet
me.
Are below the
you,
goal line.
You tell. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't have happened if he was a right shot. He had to be a left shot in this situation. But even then, it was ultra tight. But it doesn't happen without the second effort. It's a broken play, as it often is in front of the net. And it's just that last second reach by Benson to push it across. Your peripheral is the most important thing in a time like this. And he knows that he's there. And it's just like, this is not a tape-to-tape play. This is me just extending it. But I think the greater significance here, with McLeod getting on the board and then later having a primary assist, is this will be the most critical element of production. My opinion is having McLeod get back to the similar numbers that he posted in consecutive personal bests over his last two regular seasons with the Sabres. There was a natural drop off in the goal scoring, but we've talked a lot about will he shoot, will he not. It just seems like that one presented no option, right?
No, he had to shoot.
And I think the best option for the Sabres, going into last night, you were looking at, can Zucker finally break through? Can McLeod break through? Can Quinn break through? All three of them could have last night, and that's what's most important.
Yeah, especially Jack Quinn. I think he had like 4 like glorious opportunities, hit the post a couple of times. But when the McLeod scored that goal, the first thing I thought, and I didn't even tell you, because I think I got too busy eating my gummy bears or my cupcakes or whatever we had on the press box. It was delicious.
There was a lot.
But you know how Leon Draisaitl scores power play goals from that spot all the time?
A little further out, but yeah.
Like feet almost on the goal line, that angle. I'm guaranteeing you that this is something that Draisaitl would put pucks down on the goal line in practice. And McLeod, his time in Edmonton, saying, oh, you know what? I could find myself in that position. I'm going to do tons of repetition, reps, right? Because that's not an easy play to be able to, as you're drifting lower, closer to the goal line, your right foot is below the goal line, and you're able to find that angle. Huge goal, by the way. A good 20-second power play by the second unit. Another good 25-second power play by the second unit that led to Byram's goal in the second period.
So is there a story from an individual nature that is bigger? I mean, ultimately, Greenway scores the game-winning goal in the second period. It's a shot that did have a little bit of a ramp effect from the Montreal defender. But describe it just in the importance for Greenway and or the depth picture right now for Buffalo.
Well, the fourth line was playing well. They were like initiating contact on the forecheck. They were creating speed on the transition. But it's always good to score. It's always good to have points. And when you look at the way that this line was rewarded, Lindy Ruff, Jordan Greenway, they talked about this being his best game of the season. It has been a very, very long season for Jordan Greenway with injuries. But you know what? This is now the benchmark, saying like, okay, this is what you can do. Mm-hmm. Continue to do the same thing. And I do feel this was one of the better games for Kozak in the middle of the ice. He was definitely in and around the net a ton. Malenstein, we've seen, do well all season long. He actually had one of his, highlight real goal against the Montreal Canadiens this year when he toe-dragged around Fowler. So you're looking at that line. And the depth of the Sabres is important in this series. But I really felt it was going to be the McLeod line and the Norris line, the middle. But now you're adding another element. And I really didn't think Montreal had a response for what the fourth line was doing. I'm not saying they're going to go out and score four goals a game. Mm-hmm. But that's a big goal. That's an important piece of beating a team in a seven-game series.
Byram continues to produce. What should our view be of Bo right now, where he's at in his career, what he's accomplished this season, what he had already previously accomplished in his career, and especially when we talk so much about Buffalo's top four? Are we literally like on this little spinny wheel where on any given day you've got a different number one guy? And which is a kind of ridiculous statement to say when we're talking about Dahlin just being named a Norris finalist. But I think the go-to or kind of clutch aspect that we've seen from Byram and Samuelson this year leads to this conversation.
Well, it was Samuelson, Dahlin, and Byram all played about, 21 minutes last night. So it was a rotation, a trio of guys that could be on the ice at any moment. And with Bo Byram, it's funny because when he was in Colorado, you could see the talent. Mm-hmm. But there was a Kel McCarr, right? And there was a Devontae's playing top line minutes. And then Byram comes here and you're like, oh, you know what? Like, what's that going to look like for Bo Byram? Is he going to get power play time? Well, you know what? He's getting second power play time, but it's almost the most productive unit right now because Bo is so good in entries and walking the blue line and getting some shots through. Now, I think a guy like Kel McCarr and Devontae's in Colorado probably said they benefited from having a Bo Byram on the team.
Sure.
Rasmus Dahlin and Matthias Samuelson and Owen Power are probably sitting here and saying, we wouldn't be where we are right now if it wasn't for Bo Byram. Mm-hmm. In the regular season, one of three Sabres over 40 points in the year with Dahlin and Samuelson. But his playoffs, four goals already, which is a franchise high in a playoff season.
Tied for.
I mean, I would anticipate like we're seeing number five and six potentially before, before game five of this series, whatever. Like, I think that he's feeling it offensively.
It's just another reminder of, as Shayna Goldman, who will presumably be with us tomorrow in her Friday time spot, one of her favorite crutches to say is, who's to say? And I think that was the reminder of last summer. Like, who's to say? Who's to know how this is?
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All going to play out. When, if they get that contract done with Byram, thankfully it became a when they got it done with Byram. But who was to say what his production was actually going to be this year? And again, I'll go back to the clutch factor. I think Byram's just been so good for this entire group and for himself personally to continue on a terrific path. Now,
I hate to say it because we do this show throughout the summertime and we look at the roster.
I hate to say that too.
We build it and then we're like, who's going to? There was no mention last summer at all of having a Power Byram pair because it was like, well, we're going to see Dahlin and Byram together and we're going to see Power and Kesselring and that's going to maybe move Samuelson to the third pair and we'll see what happens. Well, you know what? Always expect the unexpected was the thing Mitch Korn, the great goalie coach, told me my very first training camp in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use this whenever we do summer shows for next year. Always expect the unexpected. And that was Bo Byram and Owen Power as a pair this year.
Will we learn anything from our verbal diarrhea last summer?
Peyton Krebs, Zach Benson, Bo Byram, Alex Lyon, whatever.
Holy
there
cow.
Is so
Alex,
many
thank
things.
You for the segue because, again, how do you win a game in the postseason? Everybody. Alex Lyon is now up to 4-1. The save percentage stands at .950, and the goals against average is 1.3. Overall league ranking, the Sabres are second in goals against. They're fourth in save percentage. Lyon had a great stop on Hudson in the first period before they got the game-opening goal.
Yes.
And that was, I don't know, if you were looking for moments of like, oh, cool, how's he going to respond to dispatching a Boston in round number one? There was an early example of it, and there was more late because the Habs were getting the bulk of the shots. Take us inside what you, from that position, are seeing with Alex.
So the Montreal Canadiens put up about a 3.5 expected goals, which is another goal and a half saved above expectation. We said, you know, when you look at the goaltenders this year, Linus Ullmark and Freddie Anderson were 1 and 2 in goals saved above expectation per 60, basically per game. Lyon was number 3. He's continuing to put these quality starts together. And I do feel that Lane Hudson save, even though it just cut the tip of his pad and hit the crossbar, it's a save.
It's a save.
It hit the pad. Without the pad, it's in the net, right? But there was a save on Dano in that first period. There was a save on Demidov.
There was one also right on the doorstep of the crease. Was that the Dano one?
Dano was like a lefty on the left side of Lyon. He pushed across on the back door. And there was Demidov right in slot, right like 2 feet outside of the crease.
That's the one.
That he had the one. He had a save on, I think it was a Slavkovsky play in the third period. I mean, you're looking at the one that fluttered, hit him in the face. You're looking at the body control of Alex Lyon right now, and it is about as good as you would want it to be. There's no wasting energy in anything that he does. Even when he plays the puck, and it drives me crazy, and now you're paying attention because he does the one-hand thingy. He's not wasting energy in it. I wish he did sometimes, but he's not, which is the way he plays the game.
You did not have to include me in this evaluation of anyone, let alone Alex right now.
We're a duo. I'm including you in everything.
All right, quickly through playoff.
How does it feel that your birthday was yesterday and now you're, a day after?
Okay, thank you for the reminder. Not that there wasn't enough of that talk yesterday on social, but thank you for all the incredibly kind greetings. So now, another game winner on my birthday. So we've had four of them in my lifetime from a Sabre standpoint. Rene Robert in overtime in 75. Perreault didn't have the winner. Our good friend Derek Smith had the winner in a must-win game 4 against the Islanders in 1980. But I mentioned Perreault because he had 3 goals and 1 assist in that particular game. So I was undoubtedly giddy at school the next day. Jochen Hecht had the winner against the Rangers in 07. And that was to advance to the next round. And, of course, Greenway last night. So I'm very grateful. You know what else I was grateful for?
I remember Jochen Hecht's number now, 55.
What?
I didn't remember Jokin's number yesterday when you said that. So now I remember 55.
That was a surprising development. Speaking of numbers, let's look at the odds here. Eastern Conference and Stanley Cup odds, where Buffalo stands today. How do you, does this look right to you? Carolina at minus 210 and the Sabres at plus 340 to win the East?
Carolina is 6-0 in the playoffs right now. And, you know, they got game three of their second round series tonight against Philly in Philadelphia. I think Carolina's looked great. There's always the, can Freddie Anderson keep going and whatever, but Carolina is the favorite. Buffalo is right behind them. But when you look at the odds to win the Stanley Cup, Colorado Avalanche are plus 165, Carolina plus 170. The Sabres moved into third place, tied with Vegas at plus 950. They were plus 1,100 entering the series. The Montreal Canadiens were actually plus 1,000. The Canadiens were a little favored, and then it became even. And but now Montreal dropped to fifth. And the Sabres are tied for third.
And correct me if I'm wrong. When we were looking at this in like March and April, it was around plus 2,200 and then moved up to like plus 1,800 for quite a while.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I would think because the Sabres were the best team. But now when you get to the playoffs, you're looking at the path to the Stanley Cup, right?
Exactly.
And so Colorado, who is, you know, up in their series again. I mean, they've been fantastic. Mm-hmm. They're looking, okay, if they get by Minnesota Wild, well, they would get Vegas or Anaheim. You know, I don't want to say it's light. It's the playoffs. You get to the conference finals, you deserve it. Mm-hmm. But the path of Colorado is not the same as anybody in the Eastern Conference.
Real quick, before we hit around the National and then Darren Dreger coming up, and again, if you missed it off the top, Dahlin is a Norris finalist for the first time, which is incredibly exciting news for him and for the organization on the heels of a win last night in Game 1 against Montreal. One word for Game 2 tomorrow.
Two words.
Okay.
Puck management. And I think that that's something that Marty said we touched on for the Montreal Canadiens, because the Sabres in Game 1, had 10 unmanned rushes. They only had 18 in six games against the Boston Bruins, because the Boston Bruins would just like dump it in and make you have to come up 200 feet. Buffalo was able to benefit from some turnovers that Montreal did have, either in the offensive zone or in the neutral zone, and that is going to be a key for Montreal. I still think puck management is a key for Buffalo, because Montreal can turn it on, especially with their top line and counterattack. And the reason why Sabres were so good is for most of that Game 1, they managed the puck well. They didn't turn it over. They had a couple of mishaps, and Montreal did come off the ice, but that puck management is going to be huge. So it's a two-word
I like
Thursday.
I like it, and the Ducks liked their road performance again last night against Vegas. We dive in on their offense. It was from the two that, you know, moving forward are going to be, outside of Cutter Gauthier, the most important in the franchise.
Yes.
Unlike what Getzlaff and Perry were back in the day, and that's Beckett Seneca and Leo Carlson. Both contributed, and both were undoubtedly mildly frustrated the way Game 1 of the series had gone and the way this one started, because they weren't breaking through against Carter Hart, but they stayed with it and played an excellent game.
Well, the way that it started is Vegas took a penalty hurdle for high sticking. And then before that penalty was over, Mitch Marner, a delay of game puck over glass. And then Eichel, double minor. There was 5-on-3. There was like so many power plays, and they couldn't score. They had so many chances. Carter Hart was fantastic in that. But you want to score goals. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they broke through in the second period, were able to add an empty net goal. They gave up a goal late, but that was a really solid game by Anaheim. They could have won that game 7-1 yesterday. It was a 3-1 game, but it was that dominant by Anaheim, in my opinion, in Game 2 in Vegas.
Yeah, it was sadly disturbing, obviously, for Dostal to lose the shutout so late. I mean, we saw
10 seconds.
There was 1954. It was unbelievable.
It was a face-off in the defensive zone with like 15 seconds, and then that puck went in with like 5. Yeah.
Only time ever, maybe, Mark Stone, no emotion upon scoring a goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, they knew the game was over.
I know, but we always talk about his over-exuberance in celebration.
I mean, he shot it from, you know, the shot was taken from the half wall, and then he was in front for the deflection. And, you know, but that,
that series is 1-1, very interesting right now.
Very interesting.
I love it.
Because Anaheim, like, they surprised me against the Edmonton Oilers in the first round, and being able to play that game and overcome some deficit and pounce back. And, and this is a totally different game with Vegas. Mm-hmm. Tight, low-scoring games. But they're still like being able to find a way to produce and to create offensively.
Yeah, it's probably a dream scenario, quite frankly, for Joel Quenneville to have it be different and to be able to reinforce the need to be different. Yeah. And the first round was interesting and surprising from both teams, Anaheim and Edmonton, in that series, because it was disappointingly surprising from Edmonton's standpoint that they couldn't match or even come close to what they had done in the previous two seasons. Now Vegas, Anaheim 1-1, Colorado's up 2-0 in Minnesota. Same thing for Carolina as they look to go up 3-0 tonight against Philadelphia, and the Sabres try to take both on home ice to open the series against Montreal with the game tomorrow here at KeyBank Center. One quick note, just and we'll dive a little deeper, undoubtedly, with Darren here in the next segment. But salary cap is going to be exactly where we were hearing that it would be for this coming season, at $104 million.
So in January, the NHL came out and said, this is the projection for the next few years. We believe the cap will go up $8.5 million from this season to next, meaning it would go up to $104 million. That's exactly what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And then it looks like it could go up $9.5 million in 2 years to go to $113.5 million. And that was the projection the league had given the teams over the last 2 years. I mean, they don't miss on those projections. No. They have a lot of people on it. So for everybody who's like, oh, the cap's going to be $104 million. The GMs, the leagues, the presidents, whatever, they already knew it was going to be $104 million a year and a half ago when the league finally said the cap was going to continue to go up. Now, right. We were out of the COVID flat cap era. So a lot of teams are going to have massive space on their cap for next year. It just, there may not be massive players to go get because everybody's re-signing with their teams because there's the room.
Well, we can dive in with Darren Dreger on that coming up. Of course, don't forget that our coverage around these Sabre playoff games continues just like it's been all year. Even though the games are nationally televised right now, we continue with pre- and post-game coverage here on MSG and all the Sabres social platforms. So very portable wherever you are. You can have the opportunity to tune in for the Buick GMC game night, and that leads you into the action. And as soon as it's done, we'll be back on with our Lexus post-game show. So we'll break down everything and give it to you from a Sabre vantage point. Right now, Buffalo up 1-0 in the series. Darren Dreger coming up.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story.
These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.